Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, courts. May it please the court, Ms. Murphy. My name is John Baker, and I am here today representing Flynn Hanners. What we are asking this court to do is to reverse a grant of summary judgment entered by the district court on a constitutional race discrimination claim. Now, what happened in this case was Flynn Hanners, who had a stellar career with the Illinois State Police, sent out an email and acknowledging he sent it on his ISP authorized computer on his ISP account, and he sent it out to ISP coworkers. The email, I think, is fairly well established in the record. I don't think anyone really disputes what the email contained.
And isn't it clearly unprofessional for a law enforcement officer to send out an email mocking and stereotyping the people that he is supposed to serve?
I don't believe that the email itself is unprofessional. I think that when you look at the contents of the email,
that's a professional email, isn't it?
Well, I don't believe that it is. It was sent off of his ISP account, but to say that it was a professional email, Judge Rover, I disagree with that. This was, you know, the evidence revealed that throughout the Illinois State Police.
I didn't say it was a professional email. I said, isn't it unprofessional for a law enforcement officer to send a mocking email?
I don't believe that it is. I think that this was not something that was dispersed to the public at large. This was not something that was dispersed to the Illinois State Police at large.
The test, is it?
Well, I think that the test becomes who are the recipients of the email, and that's really what we have as a question here. Under ISP rules, it was improper for Mr. Hanners to send out the email. But what we established through the evidence was it was common for people to send out emails that were unrelated to work. And we have a number of those.
But this is related to work. The stereotypes every segment of the population, it would seem.
Judge Rovner, I think that the appropriate way to look at it is it was a joke. And I don't think that the email in and of itself, I think if you ask Mr. Hanners today, would he send it out? Probably not. Mr. Hanners had heard this email referenced on the radio. It was a joke. It was an equal opportunity. If it offended anyone, it was equal opportunity in the way that it went about it. It talked about every area of town. The people who received the email, and I believe that there were 16 or 17 of them, all of them were asked to file a complaint saying that they were offended by the email. None of them were. None of them were. And so when we talk about whether this is professional or unprofessional, I will grant you that the rules of the Illinois State Police forbid an employee from sending a non-ISP-related email. I don't agree that there is anything unprofessional about this particular email. It does not pick out one particular segment of the population. It was understood by the recipients to be a joke. No one, everyone was asked. Not one person was offended. The only time it became offended was when it got up above, and it got to the upper command, and they were the ones who became offended. Now, I think did you have a question, Judge?
Pretty important group of people who are offended.
Well, yes and no, but I think it depends upon how you look at the ISP policies. All right. What you had was largely three African-American officers who came in and said they are the ones. They are the ones who interjected race into this particular issue. They are the ones who brought that up. Nobody else had brought it up. And when you look at the policies,
it tells me they were more courageous than the others.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, I think that the opposite is true, particularly when we're talking about the Illinois State Police. I don't believe that they were courageous in this situation. If they were courageous in this situation, then the email could have stood on its own. They claim, we didn't need a complaining witness. But if they didn't need a complaining witness, Your Honor, why did they go and try and get one? They tried to round up, out of 17 people, they tried to get somebody to say they are offended. And when we talk about the Illinois State Police, Judge Rovner, and when we talk about the courage involved in the Illinois State Police, I think it's only appropriate to look at the disciplinary decisions that have been issued by these same individuals. And I have outlined those in the back of my brief. And so when we start talking about courage, we have another person who was watching a pornographic movie in his squad car and was turned in by a citizen and a complaint was filed. And he was given a 3-day suspension for that. And we go on and on and on and on in our brief about different disciplinary issues that were done by Mr. Nelson. Now, so if we want to talk about courage, I don't see that as courage. I see this as selective enforcement of a policy and of a rule. And I believe that a jury could properly make that determination based upon the evidence that's in the record. I mean, here we have, first of all, this case originally goes back to Mr. Hanner's supervisor, a female who has risen very high in the Illinois State Police. She's told to investigate this. She does investigate it. She conducts the interviews of all of the relevant people. She prepares a disciplinary memo. She takes it to her supervisor, who is a captain. Her supervisor signs off on it, thinks that what she has done is right, and that is to issue a reprimand for improperly using this computer. That's what they decide should be done. But at that point in time, the upper command says, no, you know what, that's not good enough, we're going to yank it away from you. And that's a recurring theme throughout this case. That happens again in the rating session. And I think that our brief and the brief of the defendants disagrees as to Ms. Anderson Martin's testimony, but Ms. Anderson Martin's deposition is in the record, and I believe her views are very clear.
I think you're making a good argument, and I may actually agree with you, that the 30-day suspension was harsh for this infraction, particularly compared to the other disciplines that were given out for what, at least in my view, are more serious infractions. But what evidence is there that Mr. Hanner's got this harsh sanction because of his race?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question, Judge Feinerman, and that's what this case boils down to. And really what the question is can a jury permissibly make that determination? Do we have direct evidence that says one person said, hey, look, this isn't going to happen? No. What we have, though, is we have three African-American officers who all interject race into the situation when no one else had seen race.
They interjected the race of the people who were being made fun of. They didn't interject the race of the person who sent the email.
No, but I think we can ask the question and we can look at it this way. If Mr. Hanner's had been African-American, would they have raised that issue? And I believe that a jury can permissibly draw the inference that they wouldn't have. And I think that we can look at other inferences.
And how that's relevant to your point, to be perfectly honest. What evidence is there that the three African Americans would have reacted differently to the email if it had been sent by an African American or someone from Fiji or a Latvian?
Because it was the racial issue. And Judge Rovner, I would look at this court's recent decisions. There was a case, the Ailman case, that came out from this court last week, where the court talked about what inferences a jury may permissibly find. And that was Judge Posner's decision. And in that case, there was a situation where an individual was holding a hand, a police officer was holding the hand of a mother of a victim. Judge Posner said, look, based on that and based on a failure to follow policy, a jury could reasonably conclude that he was sexually attracted to this person. I don't see the attenuation any different in this particular case. We have them continually not following policy. We have supervisors who are making decisions. On the rating session, Ms. Anderson Martin is the one who is supposed to...
What evidence did you present that a non-Caucasian would have been treated differently?
Judge, we presented a lot of evidence that is indirect evidence. The evidence that we have is this decision was made by African-American officers. This was a decision that they interjected the issue of race. They said things like, he should have just come out and said the N-word, it would be the same thing. Now,
well, wouldn't it be expected that an email that promotes negative racial stereotypes would be considered offensive by members of the group that's being stereotyped? How is that evidence that the email wasn't racist?
Well, Judge, I'm having a terrible time. I don't believe that the email was racist, and I also don't believe that the policies were followed. I see my red light is on, and I don't know if the court wants me to.
But I will say this: the fact that you don't seem to grasp that the email could itself have been considered racist really does lend further support for me to the determination that the sending of the email reflected very poorly on Mr. Heimner's judgment.
Well, Judge Rovner, and I do notice my time is up, and I think if you...
Don't worry about the time.
You haven't listened to Judge Easterbrook, Lisa. I understand what the court is saying. But I think that when we look at the totality of this, and Mr. Hanner's part of the discipline was for not exercising good judgment and sending what he had done. And in that particular situation, his supervisor and her supervisor had recommended a written reprimand. And if that's what had happened, we wouldn't be here. What you have is you have an email that no one who received it complained about. That's what we have. And so I know my time is up. I do appreciate the court.
Could you tell me who there are five defendants, and I assume three of them are the African-American officers you referenced?
Three of them are, yes.
Okay, which ones are the African-American officers?
Nelson, who is the deputy director, Stallworth, and Rich Woods.
So you're saying... Well, what did Adams and Trent have to do with the discipline?
Yeah, Trent was the director, and I think ultimately his testimony was he signed off on whatever had been recommended down below.
I'm not intending to buy off on your suggestion that just because there are African Americans involved in the decision making, it was race based. But I'm taking your argument on its own terms, and I wanted to explore that just for a moment. So Trent. And what about Lance Adams? What was his involvement in the process?
Lance Adams was the immediate subordinate to Mr. Nelson. So he would have been in the technical chain of command. He was involved at the rating session. He was there, and he addressed this issue. Mr. Nelson was not involved in the rating session itself, although Mr. Nelson was the one who ultimately determined what Mr. Hanner's ratings were going to be.
Thank you. Or did you have another question?
Thank you very much.
Okay, so hi, Ms. Murphy.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
May it please the Court, Rachel Murphy, Assistant Illinois Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the defendants appellees. This Court should affirm the grant of summary judgment because there is no evidence that race discrimination motivated the defendants' actions here, and in any event, they would be entitled to qualified immunity. Mr. Hanner's has not presented any evidence pointing to race discrimination as the motivation for his suspension and low promotional rating.
What reason was given for the suspension?
Formally. The inappropriate nature of the internal communication.
And that violated a particular regulation?
Yes.
What regulation was that?
That violated two. And this was a charge that was recommended by Suzanne Bond of the EEO office, not any of the defendants. And so the claim that this was a novel charge that was made up by defendants is incorrect. Suzanne Bond, along with Robert Sambaluri of the EEO office, recommended a level one charge for misuse of equipment, which was under rules of conduct 2 Roman 3A 38, and also a level 4 charge under Rules of Conduct 2-3A-64 for violating Personnel Directive 9, which asks that managers and supervisors uphold the spirit and intent of the EEO program.
Now, my puzzlement throughout my study of this case has been why everything was done in the context of the EEO program. Why he was charged with violating the spirit and intent of that program, when, as my colleague Judge Rovner mentioned at the beginning of the argument, the obvious problem here is that he disparaged the people he was entrusted to protect. And that's a far broader problem than an EEO problem. But he never was charged with that, was he?
Yes. And the decision...
Yes, he was, or yes, he was not. I'm sorry.
It was charged. The decision to refer this investigation to EEO was made by a person in the Division of Internal Investigations who is not a defendant. So there was a decision made, and I wanted to correct something that my opponent stated. The decision to refer to EEO was made before Sherry Anderson Martin made her recommendation along with Gordon Fidler about the oral reprimand. It is clear from the record that she had not even interviewed Mr. Hanners by the time the decision was made to refer this to EEO. So any intimation that this was somehow stripped from Fidler and Anderson Martin because they were going to impose lesser discipline is contradicted by the record. So the decision was made by someone in internal investigations that this was an EEO matter. And at that point, the investigation proceeded with Sergeant Sam Bellouri.
How did he violate the EEO to disparage not anybody in the police department organization, but to disparage members of the public?
The disparage.
My problem, he seems to have been charged with something other than what he did.
Well, the Per 9 wants managers to promote inclusiveness and not divisiveness. I believe Colonel Nelson testified what this email does, by a manager sending out an email that disparages groups based on their socioeconomic status, their gender, their sexual orientation, as well as their race, both African American and Caucasian, that sends a message to subordinates that it's okay. It's okay to disparage the people that we serve based on these characteristics. And so for a manager to send that message violates the spirit of the EEO program, because the purpose of the EEO program is to promote inclusiveness among the police employees. That's my understanding as to why this was deemed an EEO matter. The various bits of evidence that Hanners attempts to string together do not point to race discrimination. Unsupported speculation about the motives of his African-American superiors has no bearing. There's no evidence, as Your Honor pointed out, that their reaction was because Mr. Hanners is Caucasian. And in fact, other Caucasian officials, including two defendants, but as well other officials within the police, found this email offensive on multiple levels, and not just because it disparaged African Americans, but because it disparaged Caucasians. And so his point that somehow it was these three African American defendants who injected race into this matter is simply incorrect.
Well, why isn't that a jury question? I mean, you have a situation where Douglas Lee threatened to kill his wife or his ex-wife and got a letter of reprimand. You have William Fritchie, who lost 3 grams of heroin and got a one-day suspension. Those are all pretty serious offenses. And then you have Mr. Hanners, who sent what I'll grant you is a really distasteful email, and he got a 30-day suspension. So here, that's one piece, is the disparity of the punishment. The other piece is not necessarily that you had three African-American, that the three superiors who pointed out the fact of the criticism of the African-American community or the stereotyping were African-American, but they did point out, they didn't focus on the NASCAR, they didn't focus on the lesbian, they didn't focus on the transgendered person. They focused on the stereotyping of the African-American.
And that's actually incorrect. I'm sorry, that's actually not true.
Okay. And then you have the fact that the person who sent the email was white. So couldn't a reasonable jury, putting all those three things together, and maybe one of the three things is incorrect, couldn't a reasonable jury say, you know what, if Mr. Hanners hadn't been non-black, he wouldn't have gotten as heavy a suspension?
No, Your Honor. There is not enough here to support sending this to the jury. I'd like to start with the point that's incorrect, which is, although Mr. Hanners focuses on defendants' statements about African Americans, if you read the depositions, it is plain that defendants found this email offensive on all of the levels that we stated in the brief. They did not simply state that they found this offensive because it was derogatory towards African Americans. In fact, they went through the whole list, in some cases Barbie by Barbie, explaining why each of these was offensive. And the majority of the Barbies, in fact, were believed to be Caucasian. Some of them were stated Caucasian only, in fact. And so it was not simply the one or two that referenced defendants believed to reference African Americans that they found offensive. And so although Mr. Hanners has cherry-picked those remarks, the totality of the evidence does not support that kind of focus. Additionally, as for the list of comparators, Your Honor would have a point if we knew the race of those comparators, but we do not. It is impossible to state that non-Caucasians were systemically treated better if you do not know the race of those people who were treated better. And so while it may point to the state police disproportionately punishing Mr. Hanners, it doesn't point to race as the reason for that disproportionality. So that also does not merit sending this to a jury. And finally, as I stated, the fact that three of his superiors were African American and, among a variety of other reasons, found this email offensive because it made fun of African Americans, when you have Caucasians who also found this offensive and the African American superiors found it offensive because it made fun of Caucasians, that also is not sufficient to send this question to a jury. If there are no other questions, we ask that you affirm. Thank you.
I appreciate it. I know my time is up. I want to address...
Go ahead. We're going to give you 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Judge Rovner. I want to address what you said, Judge Fenerman, and Ms. Murphy's response to it. She's partially correct. At the depositions, they added the other issues as an aside. At least a couple of them did after they had been sued about this. But I think that the critical inquiry is what was said during the actual rating session meeting that occurred before this ever happened. And the best evidence of that is Sherry Anderson Martin's deposition. And according to Sherry Anderson Martin, they complained. They said he should have just come out and said the word, which she said was queer, meant the N-word. And they didn't bring up problems related to anyone else. That was the issue that they brought up.
Did Anderson Martin say that the three African-American supervisors focused exclusively on the African-American stereotype and not any of the others?
That I don't want to mislead the court, but that is my recollection of what she said about that particular meeting. Yes. her deposition is part of the record, and so it should be clear from that as far as what she said. I also want to address this notion that there were other white superiors who found this to be offensive. The record reveals that there was one person, and that was Mr. Adams. He testified that he was offended by it. Ms. Bond didn't testify. She didn't say she found it herself to be offensive. Mr. Trent said he had heard it was offensive, but he was unfamiliar with the actual facts that were involved. So when I think a fair reading of the evidence is it was those three individuals who were the ones who were driving this. So we would ask that the court reverse and remand this matter back to the district court for a trial. And I do thank the court for allowing me to go on.
Oh, thank you. Thanks to everyone. The court will take the case under advisement.